Hey, this is Michael Bohm with Youth Apologetics Training. Today, we're going to keep going on this series about slavery, and more specifically today, we're going to talk about slavery in the New Testament. And we're going to start looking at questions like, why doesn't Jesus condemn slavery just outright in the New Testament? And why doesn't Paul or Peter or any of the apostles talk about slavery explicitly? And so we're going to explore these issues. We're going to look at the New Testament. We're going to look at the Roman version of slavery. And, well, just try to get into all that. Now, we're not going to finish the New Testament side of this today, but we'll get started with it. And, well, within the next couple of days, we'll have it finished. At last. So with that, let's go ahead and jump right in. Okay, so let's change gears here. What about the New Testament? Let me ask you this. Why hasn't the New Testament explicitly condemned slavery? Why doesn't the New Testament just in your face, out in the open, say slavery is wrong, and we shouldn't be doing this? In fact, why didn't Jesus say anything about slavery? I mean, right? He didn't say anything real explicit, anything out in the open, anything straight up about slavery. Why is that? And some of you are feeling the burn right now. Well, some of you are thinking, well, gosh, in light of the Old Testament slavery, why is New Testament slavery any different? Well, actually it was. New Testament slavery was under Roman rule. Slavery was a bit different. In some ways, it wasn't too bad, although it was okay to beat your slave under this Roman version of slavery. So anyway, what about Jesus? Did he say anything about slavery? Well, we're going to get into pretty much everything the New Testament says about slavery, but just really quickly, just so you guys can remember, Jesus did say, he did quote from Isaiah when he said he came to set the captives free. And that's the Jesus we serve. He also said, well, he talked about subjects like greed, materialism, and generosity, and just being content. So he touched on a lot of subjects. He did not explicitly address the slavery issue, except for to say that he came to set the captives free. In context, he wasn't necessarily talking about physical slaves. He was talking about slaves to sin, but in many ways, he still kind of touched on the issue. Now, why doesn't the New Testament explicitly address this? All right. Well, let's go ahead and jump right in here. And by the way, I took a good deal of information for this New Testament section from a couple different websites. And I'm going to go ahead and put those links in the show notes because I know a lot of you guys are going to be interested in going there. A couple really well-written articles. One of them was on Bible.org, and it was some initial reflections on slavery in the New Testament. That was a good article. Another one I found was by Paul Copan. Paul Copan is the guy that wrote the book, Is God a Moral Monster? I don't agree with everything he says, but that book's pretty awesome. It's got some good stuff in there. So anyway, both of these websites, I will have links to these articles. Anyway, some facts about Roman slavery. A lot of Roman slaves were taken as spoils of war. And we know that much. Some of them sold themselves into slavery as well. So, sure, it is similar to the Old Testament Hebrew version of slavery in some respects. A lot of these slaves were well educated. In fact, a lot of these slaves were used as kind of like nannies that would raise children. Okay? They would be used to teach the children and raise the children. They used them for a lot more tasks than that, but I'm just saying, they were allowed to have an education. And unlike what we see in our American history and how we treated slaves in the South, for the most part, these slaves were shown a lot of respect. They were treated fairly decently, although, again, like I mentioned earlier, they could be beaten. It was something that didn't happen too often, but it did happen. No, there's no doubt about it. Okay. But check this out. This is interesting. In this Roman version of slavery, slaves could marry. They could accumulate wealth. That's interesting. They could purchase their own freedom. And this is, to me, this is the most interesting. They could run their own business. What? I mean, that's kind of cool. But anyway, sorry, I mean, slavery is not cool, but you get my point, right? Cicero noted that a slave could usually be set free within 7 years. And under Roman law, a slave would normally be set free by the age of 30. Now, I don't think that this happened all the time. And again, this is not what the Bible prescribes. This is just, again, we're talking about what the conditions for slaves were back then. Now, under different leadership, under different rulers, the treatment of slaves was different, okay? And then, of course, every household treated their slaves a little bit different. So I'm kind of giving you a vague, in general, overview here. More interesting facts is as much as 2/3 of the Roman Empire were slaves. And apparently before the first century, it was even as high as 90%. Could you imagine that? 90% of the society is slaves? Huh. That is so bizarre to me. But moving forward, by the first century AD, more and more slaves were being set free, and it was so much so that Caesar had to actually write up laws that would govern the procedure of how you set slaves free. All right, so looking through New Testament glasses here and how Christianity has, how Jesus projected his faith onto us Christians and the world. As far as the New Testament goes, friends, the New Testament, nowhere does Jesus or Paul or Peter or James or any of these guys teach us or even insinuate that we should be forcing the world around us to live according to the Bible standards, right? As far as the New Testament goes, now, of course, that's different in Old Testament times. Why? Well, because God was speaking to a nation. These are rules for this nation of Israel, whereas the New Testament, God is talking to just the church. It's a little different. And the church is not a nation. It is a group of people who follow Christ, who are about to go out and mix themselves into the world. And that is neat. Okay, why? Why is that neat? Because in Christianity, we change people's hearts. We don't force them to conform to the Bible, okay? All you out there who are into this Joel's Army manifest sons of God, dominionism, all these different movements that think that we're going to subdue the earth in a forceful way, and then after we have subdued the earth and we have taken over the earth forcefully, then Jesus can come back. Okay, that's nuts, guys. That is nowhere in the Bible. New Testament, guys, we are not a nation. as believers. We're not a nation. We're a group of people. We're the church. And we change people's hearts. We change the world from the inside out. All right? And so, as far as my version of politics goes, you know, I am all about, as an American, going out and voting and trying to change the laws, because we have that opportunity. But if we as Christians are putting all of our time into forcing our morality on the rest of the nation, who clearly wants to kill babies, as disgusting as that is, they want to have uncontrolled sex and do all these nasty things, and they want to, they want to sin, guys. They do. And we can't force them to not sin. Let's go ahead and vote. You know, we should be trying to get people saved. And you know what? When that happens, the society, I mean, as a whole, when we start changing the hearts of the society, well, the laws will follow, naturally. So what am I saying here? Let me spell it out in clear, plain English. Instead of putting, there's some of you out there that are putting a whole lot of effort into the political side of things. You're wasting your time. I mean, if you're not going to do anything else, go ahead and do that. Sure, why not? Okay, if you're not doing anything else. But how much better? How much better to put your efforts into getting people saved and cleansing their mind through the washing of the word and changing the nation from their hearts, from the inside out? That's how it's done, guys. That's how you have a nation chasing after God and doing righteous things because they love Jesus, not because the law says so. If that's just you, that's all you're doing. You are in the political system and that's how you roll. I'm not going to try and pull you out. Go ahead and keep it up. But if you're thinking about which direction to go, change hearts, guys, change hearts. And sure, as an aside, if you get the opportunity to change somebody's mind politically, go for it. I mean, you know, don't miss that opportunity, but don't put all your energy into it. Because it's not God's best. It's not what we as Christians really should be putting our time into. And that was a rabbit trail, but it was a good one. So anyway, in light of slavery, we really, you know, New Testament times, God was not out to force some slavery revolution into this Roman society. In fact, if they tried, the Romans would have rose up and squashed it violently. They would have seen it as a threat. I kid you not. Okay? They would have saw that as a threat. So how did Jesus want to do this? It was incrementally. It was slow. It was through changing the hearts. And guess what? The nations where Christianity has a good, strong foothold, slavery doesn't happen. I mean, yeah, we always will have our black markets. Okay. And those guys will do what they do. All right. Because we're wicked, evil people. But again, every nation where Christianity has a nice foothold, slavery doesn't happen anymore. It's shut down. And same with the Roman society. It was on the decline. Once Christianity got a good foothold, slavery slowly started phasing out because people realized that there was neither Jew nor Gentile, nor slave or free. You know what I'm talking about? Treating your neighbor and loving your neighbor as yourself. I mean, just think about the whole of the New Testament, the spirit of it, and its love, and its truth. You know what I'm saying? Not enslave your neighbor. Yes, there are some scriptures, we're going to look at them here in a few minutes, of how masters, Christian masters, are to treat their slaves, how Christian slaves are supposed to serve their masters. But you continue to feel and hear this theme of love, and there is this subtle change of heart that seems to be happening. For example, Paul, he doesn't command Philemon to let the slave Onesimus go when he gets away. And we'll talk about that some more. If you're not familiar with that story, we're going to talk about the book of Philemon. But this slave, Onesimus, escapes, and then he gets saved. And Paul writes this letter back to Philemon saying, hey, Onesimus is saved now. He's your brother, and you really ought to just let him go. And so, yeah, again, there's just this theme of love and how Christ and the Holy Spirit is trying to change people's hearts. And again, as you move forward in time throughout our history, those nations who take on Christianity and it becomes the dominant faith in a nation, you also see things like slavery disappearing altogether. And you also see things like women's rights being boosted. And that's a whole nother series right there. But women's rights being recognized and women taking on more of a prominent role in society. So anyway, let's go ahead and stop right there. Come out to the website, youthapologeticstraining.com. And guys, you can leave comments and questions there. You can contact me there. If you would like to hear me talk about something in the future, please let me know. Also, you guys can hook up with me on Facebook and Twitter. And with that, I love you guys, and I'll see you tomorrow.